News Radio 690 KTSM presents the El Paso History Show with documentary filmmaker Jackson Polk and historian Melissa Sargent, streaming live at ktsmradio.com. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. And by Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, making the old Griggs recipes in a new location at 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management, by Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. And by State Farm Agent Ralph Dickerson, 581-0000. And now, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
We have a pre-recorded show today, which is August 21st. And we're talking about the many historic markers in El Paso that pertain to the Mexican Revolution. And we're live on KTSM AM 690 and TV streaming live on our Facebook page. And it's the El Paso History Radio Show page there. And this is where we say Texas history begins in El Paso.
Folks can also listen to us streaming live on the internet via ktsmradio.com, where you'll be connected automatically to the iHeartRadio link, where you can listen to this show anywhere you go. There's internet service.
So you got a history moment?
Yes, I do. It's about the Mexican Revolution comes to an end.
What year was that?
1915.
I think that's arguable because I've heard it coming and going.
I'm talking specifically about this specific that was kind of like...
All right, we'll hear about it
a
second.
It was over at this point, but it was kind of trying to start it again.
A war that lingers.
Yes.
Can you imagine that? Well, I do. Let's see. Hey, August 21st, here we are. Bernie Sargent is back. Hey, dude.
Hi.
Welcome here.
Good morning, Mr. Sargent.
You're here with descriptions and explanations of several El Paso County historical El Paso County historical markers,
mm-hmm.
and that's the commission, and they denote the history during the Mexican Revolution. Now, let's just stop for a second before we get too far. What is the Historical Commission of El Paso County?
It's a group of individuals that... throw their hat in the ring, so to speak. They volunteer to become part of an organization that's sanctioned by the state of Texas. Now, they have to be appointed, or I should say validated, by the county commissioner's court once they throw their hat in the ring. And they all have to have some kind of a love or passion for the history, heritage, and culture of the community they live in. And every county in the state of Texas has a commission of sorts, some of which are very busy, some of which are not. Ours is very busy.
So who makes sure they're happy and committed?
Well, you have a chairperson that tries to wrangle them all in, like pushing string uphill sometimes. But, we've got a gal right now that's doing a really great job, Barbara Wells. She's just super.
Well, and you did this for a long time.
I did. Yeah, I was on the commission for 17 years. I was the chair for 13 of the 17.
Now, how'd that go?
Went great. We were recognized by the state for all the things that we did. I'm not taking credit for it. We just had a good group of people at the time, and they were fired up to do stuff.
So the markers are something that you have to have a committee to decide if it's worthy?
Absolutely. You have a markers committee, and you look for the public to submit suggestions as to what markers might make sense. And and they look at the list, and generally the list is anywhere from 15 to 20 nominations long. So the committee's got to weed through those and see which ones are palatable, so to speak, heritage and culture-wise. There, a lot of times it's ideology and emotion more than it is practicality and common sense. So it's quite a task to do, and certainly some people get very upset because their favorite spot is not mentioned by anyone. But it's a worthwhile cause, and it's something that I really admire the Markers Committee's work on. I was part of it for a short time, or for a time when I was with the commission, and it's a lot of work.
So how many markers do we have?
Over 250. Now, those are not only county. Those are also state, and they're also federal, and there's different levels of federal markers as well as different levels of state markers. I should say visibility. You've got archaeological, you've got architectural markers, you've got historical, you've got what they call untold stories, which is kind of a neat idea that the state commission came up with a few years ago, and that was to sort of welcome a nomination from each county that they, being the state, would not normally recognize because it didn't impact the state as a whole. It impacted that's only the county.
That's the distinction?
That's the distinction.
It needs to impact it. Well, of course, the Mexican Revolution impacted the whole state of Texas.
Absolutely. Well, the whole country.
Even though they may not know it.
Yeah.
And the reason is our history's not taught in El Paso, so most of us don't know it.
It's really not taught in the state.
Just to take a moment here and talk about also about how, the fact that, the number of people who have said, why are you always focusing on the Mexican Revolution? How would you answer that?
Well, the Mexican Revolution was something that impacted us, and it actually impacted on an international scale. You had German influence, heavy German influence in Mexico, which impacted it. And that German influence carried over to the United States. They had spies in Washington, D.C. They had spies here in El Paso.
Anarchists?
Pardon me?
Had anarchists that were blowing things up in New York?
Anarchists that were blowing things up. But, you know, the whole thing is you had Italian mercenaries that came over here to fight on the revolutionary side. So it was an interesting period of time, and it ran roughly from 1910 to 1920.
Who were the anarchists?
Who were the anarchists?
Yeah.
They were Germans that were going on blowing things up.
Oh, you mean just to stir things up?
Yeah, stir things up. They were blowing up ammunition plants.
Well, they had an agenda, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. They had a big agenda. They were keeping the United States out of the World War, the war that was going on over in England and France and all at that time. And that was the whole plot behind this thing, was to keep us busy, kind of like, you know, look at the left hand while we're doing this with our right hand.
Yeah, apparently there was like 90% of the United States Armed Forces, which was all ground troops and cavalry at the time. A little bit of airplane, but that didn't really count. So they were 90% of the U.S. Armed Forces were here on the border.
They were.
And just 10% stayed to guard Washington,
yeah,
just in case. But in the meantime, they were all down here.
Because they thought there was going to be a huge war. It was, and that was part of, I think, also part of the psychology of what the Germans were doing. And they were making it look bigger than it was. You had incursions across the border to ranchers all along the border of Texas and Arizona and California even. So I think that was all part of the plan.
Wow. All right, Bernie, let's take a look at your map of markers here. You have a whole bunch of markers. And the first map, you drew this map, you dotted this map?
I did. I dotted that because I was asked by several different organizations over the past few years if I would identify markers and or candidates for markers downtown that had some kind of an impact or an influence in one way, shape, or form to the Mexican Revolution, where be it the federales or the revolutionaries. And so I identified a number of them, and that's what we did with that first map that I've got there. And I've identified it on the right-hand column, the different buildings and so on, and different sites that those markers or those red dots identify.
Is that just downtown?
That's just downtown.
Okay, how many are there just in downtown?
I think I was a count of about 20 to 25. And then on the second picture that we've got, the second map that we'll bring up, that one is that's more identified as to what I perform as a walking tour. And the reason being is, you know, generally people when they walk, they want information, but they will only absorb as much as their feet can withstand. And so, you know, we typically will walk that particular tour. And you can see the sites identified on the top of that page as to what those were all about. So it's an interesting walk. It's a lot of fun. And what I like to do is talk about the side stories, too, the sidebars that took place at those locations. You know, because if you talk about different events or different impacts that took place during the revolution, just verbatim, a lot of the folks that go on these tours already know that because they're interested in history. So I'd like to share some sidebar information with them as to, you know, why that marker, what else happened with that marker. You know, for instance, when you talk about the Mexican Revolution, I think most everyone has heard that Pancho Villa was pretty much a photo hog. He loved to be photographed.
He's right behind you.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah, it didn't stop there.
Nah.
But, he loved to be photographed. And when he was approached by a movie studio in Los Angeles to film the revolution, he jumped at that opportunity because he figured it would help his cause. It would promote the opportunity to raise money and funds and perhaps get people to join up with the cause. And he had posters all over the place, enlist, help the revolutionaries.
Was there one of those people, was that Randolph Hearst? Did he get involved in that?
Newspaper-wise, yeah. Yeah, he did a lot of hard copy publishing of what was going on with the revolution.
He also had a ranch in northern Mexico.
He did, yeah. He had quite a spread down
there. And he wanted that protected. Is that how that worked out?
He was covering both sides, though. He was working with the federales as well as the revolutionaries to make sure that his property was taken care of.
But he put Pancho in to make sure Pancho didn't
help get Pancho involved.
Attack his ranch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's interesting when you talk about, you know, who he attacked and who he didn't attack. Yeah, that seemed to be the thing. If he assumed that you were a sympathizer of the Mexico City government, you were a target.
Oh.
Case in point, the Chinese community. He did not like the Chinese community.
Yeah.
And some of his commanding officers, his generals and so on, they would eliminate the Chinese as they found them.
And you shoot them on sight?
On sight, yeah.
Was that his order, their order, what?
No, actually, I don't know if it was totally his order, because these guys acted somewhat independent. You know, like when you talk about the railroads being blown up and Americans being killed, there's one particular American general that did that, or excuse me, Mexican revolutionary colonel that served under Pancho Villa that attacked a train and wiped out everybody but one person who managed to sneak away. Had it not been for him sneaking away from that train, we would not have known the story of all the Americans that were killed on that train.
Wow. What's that next picture? You got newspaper clippings there?
Yeah. What I'm talking about there, you know, when you talk about the influence and the impact here in El Paso, you look at that particular newspaper article, and that gives an account of how many people were killed and wounded by quote-unquote errant bullets that just happened to come across the Rio Grande.
Well, how many guns were firing on a given moment in the height of battle on the other side of the river?
Well, there were estimates.
50,000?
I don't think it was that many. I mean, you know, they talk 1,800 to 2,000 revolutionaries, and you had 700 to 800 federales in Juarez.
800?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they were all well-armed, both sides.
Both sides, yeah.
They were
Gatling
shooting
guns and everything.
Big-caliber bullets?
Yeah, they were all over the place with whatever they could get.
Yeah.
Typically, you know, the old Springfield, the lever actions, they would use those a lot. They had some Mausers because the Germans supplied them a lot of weapons.
Well, was it the thing that they were trying not to shoot the United States?
That was the comment.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was a comment.
Sort that may like, not be the reality.
Yeah, sort of like the bullet holes in the old city hall. Yeah. Whoops. How did that happen?
Oh, my. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's kind of their own little Mexican revolution that's going on now between the cartels and the government of the Mexico, because you've had some shootings. Now they've been shooting across the border at the Border Patrol.
Twice over the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And back in that day, you would have also been able to, not long ago, you could have hit the mayor's office real easy.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that was attempted a time or two.
Well, there were some stories about Tom Lee being kind of picked on or I should say mandated for murder.
When was City Hall when he was mayor?
That would have been down on, what is it?
San Antonio,
yeah.
And roughly what, Stanton or?
Close to Stanton, yeah.
Yeah. So they might have hit that, but they hit the plaza.
They did.
San Jacinto Plaza.
Yeah, if you look at some of those people on that particular picture that I pulled out of the newspaper, it tells of the locations of some of those things that took place.
Is that next picture connected to that?
Where are we at?
Number five. We were just talking about four. Number five has got that guy's...
Huerta?
Is that who he is?
Yeah, I think they're talking about finally admitting that there was a war going on, a revolution going on across the border. I mean, like it wasn't evident that it was taking place. So they finally, the Mexican government said, yes, we are having a little bit of a problem with these ne'er-the-wells, the revolutionaries. And that's what some of those articles all are about there. And, you know, Huerta trying to cover his backside... because he could see the rise fomenting in Mexico.
What does that next picture,
charming-looking individual there. Yeah, he had served as president of Mexico for over 30, well, I think it was 30 years. For only one short period of time during that stretch was he not president of Mexico. And a lot of people in Europe and so on gave him credit for unifying Mexico and bringing control. Well, he brought control, but it was all controlled by the hierarchy of Mexico. So the folks that worked for a living, the farmers, the ranchers,
the peones,
they were being abused immensely.
And sounds familiar.
That's what gave cause to the revolution.
Also, those the people who were in charge of the good fortune, shall we say, they were the big landowners.
Yeah, yeah, they were, and big landowners like the one that where Pancho Villa grew up gave him motivation to become a revolutionary because of the things he did to his family.
Yeah.
And so he was not alone, and you had folks all over Mexico that rose up, and some of them became leaders of the revolution.
Yeah, normally they never in their own life would have never gone any farther than where they were a peasant, you know. And look at how Orozco was one of them. Mm-hmm. Zapata is another kind
Emiliano
of person.
Emiliano Zapata,
same thing.
Yeah. And a lot of people feel that Zapata was actually a better commanding officer than Villa.
Yeah.
He was more fair to the people around him. Whereas Villa was notorious for eliminating somebody that got in his way.
Even
scary
on his
man.
Own side.
Well, we got about a minute left in this segment. What markers does this cover here? There's a Huerta marker somewhere?
Yeah, the Huerta marker was at the gravesite.
Which
where
is
he's
where?
Buried, at Evergreen.
Oh, he's at Evergreen.
Yeah, he's okay. the only, as far as I know, the only leader of his kind outside of that's been buried in the United States.
I have to correct that, because there's a story going on. Huerta was not buried at Evergreen. It was the other leader that was buried at Evergreen who died of alcoholism. His kidneys just gave out on him.
Isn't that
weird? No, he actually abdicated to France.
But he came. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So we'll have to take a close look at that picture. It's too tiny on my page. I can't read it.
Yeah. And mine's scrolling so fast I can't see it either.
We'll figure it out.
But anyway, Huerta was gone finally, and that's when Madero kind of stepped in and became the leader.
Interesting discussion here with Bernie Sargent about the El Paso County Historical Commission markers that are out there. And we're looking at maybe 25 of them, give or take, that pertain to the Mexican Revolution. And we do that because those are very important to El Paso history. That's why they're Texas historical markers in El Paso, in Texas, dealing with a government across the river who had a major deal going on, and it's a very interesting thing. So we're about out of time on this segment. How we got? Okay, yeah, we'll wrap it up here. And I tell you what, we'll be back in a minute, and you'll be looking at Facebook when this show goes live.
Yes, I'll be live with you on my Facebook at home.
Yeah, there you go.
Following along.
All right, back in just a moment.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. And by State Farm Agent Ralph Dickerson, 581-0000. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Generally speaking, you can send us an email, ephistory690@gmail.com. I have a lot of people contacting us about shows that they want to do, they want to see done, and that's how they find me. We're the History Show on El Paso History Radio Show on Facebook, and we have our weekly promo there on a regular basis. And we have a TV channel now called El Paso History on YouTube. And we've got a bunch of stuff on there. The DVDs I've been producing for the last 20 years are now online for free. Take a look at those, youtube.com/El Paso History TV. And the 20 segments of our ABC 7 TV series from, it's also called, oddly enough, how cute is this? El Paso History TV. And we are now online at www.youtube.com, El Paso History TV. And those are the 20 segments that Bernie and I did, and Andrew contributed. And what we did was we put together pieces. When you put them together, they're 3 minutes. Well, good old Kevin Lovell over there, he said, hey, that's great, but cut them in half. We'll air one at 6 and one at 10. Like, oh, how easy is this? It actually wasn't that hard to do. But anyway, so we did that. And those aired on ABC 7 from 2018 to 2020. And it was an interesting thing to watch people understand El Paso. If you do nothing else to figure out El Paso History TV, just go look at some of that stuff, and you can figure this out.
Yeah, in fact, last night we were watching YouTube, and I didn't realize we were watching YouTube on our TV, and you backed out of that one program. I went, wait, there's all the history. It was El Paso History TV. I'm like, wow, where did that come from? I thought it was on regular.
It follows you.
I know, but it was great because all of them were right out front. Because if you watch it, it locks into your system and you get to pull them up. They're all there.
So. It's cool.
Well, the El Paso County Historical Society is currently accepting nominations for inductees into the 2021 Hall of Honor. Nominees should be considered outstanding individuals of character, vision, courage, and creative spirit. They must have lived in El Paso County and have consistently done unusual, done the unusual, which deserves to be remembered, or have made El Paso County better for having lived in it. To nominate a deserving El Pasoan, please complete the online form found on the ElPasoHistory.com. So if you know someone who that you think is should be nominated for this honor, I think, and it's a great honor, you can go to, like I said, ElPasoHistory.com, and you can download the form there. Or you can also call them at 915-533-3603 to get more information on it.
Interesting thing to do there.
I think it's great.
All right, Bernie, we've got a couple minutes in this segment. What do you want to tackle here? You want to talk about particular things? What's this, the next one here? Next picture would be 6. Is that where you are?
Yeah, well, before I do that, let me make a correction.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, Porfirio Diaz was the ne'er-do-well that I referred to, and Huerta is buried at Evergreen Cemetery. So I had that bass backwards.
Okay.
Yeah, so we got that fixed so that people won't be hanging me in effigy.
Why not? Just because you're Bernie.
Yeah, I know. What do we got up here next? We're talking about Diaz's resignation?
I'm not sure what that one is.
Yeah, Porfirio Diaz. Yeah, that was a major, major announcement that Porfirio Diaz finally did step down, which, he was feeling the heat. And that's when he promptly got on board a ship, which I think I have in the next picture, that, he boarded this ship, happened to be a German freighter, and traveled to France to get away from the country before he would, summarily lose his life.
Ironically.
Oh, dear.
Ironically. Now, the ship also, interestingly, was used to shuttle ammunition, arms, munitions, things like that, back to Mexico. And they tried to get into Veracruz, but the U.S. Navy stopped them from doing it. And then what happened was the international community rose up because we weren't at war with Mexico.
So you can't do that.
Yeah, we legally couldn't do that. So they put all of the munitions and everything back on the boat and told them, go back to Germany. Well, what they did is they went further south and found another port where the American Navy wasn't, and they unloaded all the munitions and so on. And that way the revolutionaries could use them. Again, it was a plot to keep us busy, keep us kind of on our side so we wouldn't be looking at Europe. But, you had mentioned earlier in the program about the number of troops that were here on the border. It did serve another purpose, and it did serve a purpose in that we trained a lot of soldiers on how to fight, how to react to situations, even though most of the time they weren't fighting because they were looking for people or they were standing guard on the border.
And they were mostly National Guard, if I was correct, aren't
there was a lot of National Guard.
Yeah, and those people were, just people from all over the country, mm-hmm. had no clue what it was like fighting, and here you put them in a guerrilla war fighting situation, on the border.
Yeah.
Which was something they would utilize when they got to Germany.
And the Army Air Corps decided to try airplanes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they'd just been invented, so why not?
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to have to take a break here. Oh, by the way, it was only Porfirio Diaz who got the street up through Sunset Heights.
That's right.
It wasn't a Huerta Street.
No Huerta
no,
Street.
PDX. So, all right, we'll take a break, come back in a minute.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino with El Paso Souvenirs and Gift Shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. And by State Farm Agent Ralph Dickerson, 581-0000. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
The crowd in San Elizario is up to stuff again. On September 12th, they have a bi-national history conference. It will include bi-national heritage tourism, tribes of the Camino Real, and a bunch of additional topics. And they do this. This is, I believe it's again, that's a Sunday. So 915-851-0093. And what do you got?
Well, Pepe's Restaurant, that's where they serve the authentic New Mexican-style cuisine, and they're located at 6761 Donovan Drive. You can also call them at 877-2152 for takeout and catering. And Pepe's, remember, is always the home of the one and only margarita. Then looking for a top-rated company to manage your rental properties? Then you need to contact Monterey Asset Management. Visit their website, m1ep.com, or call them at 915-592-4549. Looking to sell, buy, or rent a home? Then contact Patrick Tuttle at Legacy Real Estate Services. Patrick is one of the top producing realtors in the area. Give Patrick a call at 915-588-1850. And our newest sponsor is State Farm agent Ralph Dickerson. He's like a good neighbor, but with a better phone. 915-581-0000.
How many zeros is that?
That's four.
Ah.
000. Call Ralph for all your insurance needs.
I'm thinking, even though it's a pre-recorded show today, I'll just tell him no. I plan to be at Pepe's.
There you go.
There you go. You guys going to make it? No, you got Concordia to work up into your brains there.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
It's kind of a crazy busy day.
All right, Bernie Sargent's in the house. We got a lot of stuff talking about the Mexican Revolution. And one thing a lot of people in El Paso don't really understand is that the Mexican Revolution had a whole lot to do with a little space right across the river from Asarco. Now, the first problem you have is, unless you know where Asarco was, you don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So Asarco is that big blank area at the moment, not too far upriver from, I guess, UTEP, if you go that way. But it's an area that the black bridges, the railroad bridges, cross there. And that space is Asarco on the American side. But on the other side, right under the black bridges, there's very nearby a marker that denotes three states and two countries.
That's right.
And that's a boundary marker. Now, that's not an historical marker, although that's a marker that's very historic.
Boundary marker number one.
And it goes there all the way to California.
Mm-hmm.
So that marker being what it is, that area on the Mexican side is where they staged a lot of this revolution.
Yeah.
Why did they pick that spot?
It was, well, it was shielded from Juarez proper. Okay, with the mountains. You know, you had kind of a strong slope just to the southeast of that particular area that was referred to as Peace Grove. And It was an area where Madero and his brother and a few of his leading cabinet members decided they were going to try to get the federales in Juarez to surrender so that they could have a peaceful takeover of Juarez and make that the provincial capital for the time being. And that between them and Juarez was a nice hill. So it protected them. And they actually, I don't think that the federales really wanted to mix it up with them because they were grossly outnumbered. But at the same time, Madero didn't really want to create too much havoc. He felt that he could control it. They could get a surrender. But lo and behold, in the middle of the night, Villa and another commanding officer decided, we're going to do this. So they went over the hill and they just beat the federales to pieces. There was a lot of people that were shot needlessly and so on. I mean, they decimated the federal troops.
And you said there were 800 federal troops and thousands of Villa troops?
Yeah, that's the estimates.
Wow. Sure. Yeah. All right, well, move on here. What's your next
picture?
Picture
you're looking at, that's looking sort of in a south-easterly direction. You can see across that dark plain, that's Hart's Mill. That's one of the few pictures from that time period that we have.
Yeah, it's the Rio Grande down there.
The Rio Grande down there. And where it's kind of dark, that would be the where there's vegetation, and you can see the tents and so on. That's one picture of Peace Grove. Now there's also a little museum of sorts on the Mexican side, and you can't legally go there as an American unless you go through the border patrol, the border checkpoints. You can sneak over there, but you best not get caught because then you're in deep trouble with the border patrol.
And if you get caught on the Mexican side, they'll rob you.
They could do that.
Not one of the better neighborhoods over on that.
No,
side.
It's not.
We've been over there on a number of occasions at the mile marker on the U.S. side and stood there, and busloads of kids from Juarez were going to that little museum. So they were teaching the kids about that location and what it meant to Mexico today. And so it's fascinating. So that's the picture there that you see. The next one shows Madero and some of his leading officers as they were strategizing, so to speak, sitting there. And it's kind of interesting seeing some of these pictures because on the other side of the river, inherently, you would see a lot of people watching what was going on the Mexican side. I think they were anticipating more of a battle taking place at Peace Grove. But as I mentioned earlier, the troops went over the hill and took care of business in Juarez. That next picture is a good picture of the folks on the U.S. side kind of chatting with the Mexican revolutionaries on the other side. That would be the very next picture that we'll pull up. Or is it? Nope, that's not, is it?
What number? You got a number on it?
Okay, let me do this. That is a picture of ASARCO going back to 1905, just to give you some historical background of what it looked like that period. You're looking towards Peace Grove, which would be on the lower left-hand side across the water. Okay, so the very next picture, that's the view of the folks watching and talking, communicating with the insurrectos across the river. So across the river is Peace Grove.
Reminiscent of Civil War battles.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they rode out in their buggies to watch the battle, took a picnic.
Yeah.
And the Army commandeered their buggy to take the wounded out.
Well, there was a situation not too far from Washington, D.C. during the Civil War where they were up there picnicking and, you know, with their champagne watching the battles. Then all of a sudden the tide turned and they were hastily beating feet out of there, grabbing everything and just leaving. Yeah, we did the same thing here. There was, like I said, there was not a whole lot of shooting going on in that particular area of Peace Grove. It was usually to the left of that picture over the hills in Juarez proper.
That was a focal point of the Mexican Revolution. Madero had an office there.
Yeah.
And that's now been reconstructed as a museum.
As a museum.
Wow.
Pretty interesting.
What, you know, kills me is the fascination of the Americans to go over and watch this going on. But like I said, this one picture is so fascinating. We're looking at them and they're looking at us. There's just as many on that side looking back across the river. And it's like, what is, I guess, because we've not had wars in this country for many, many years outside of the Civil War, fascination, I guess, to see what a war looked like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably would have done the same thing. I'd have gone down and looked.
Mm.
You know, you can see the railroad tracks there. That's one of our major railroad tracks that came in. Oftentimes, people would get on top of the boxcars and watch the battles going on also.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll see a little bit more of that later on in the presentation.
So what's this picture here? Oh, that's the same people?
Yeah.
Okay.
The next one is a picture of ASARCO, again, giving kind of an aerial view of that particular area, with Smeltertown in the lower right-hand corner, which is a community in of itself. It was like a city within a city. You know, you had the folks that worked at ASARCO, and in some cases, folks from across the river that were sneaking across for their own safety would be living there, and that would be their homes.
There was no wall.
No wall. No, just water.
Yeah. They were more like, it was more like a company town because they had stores and everything. I mean, it was a community, but like you hear about back east with the big steel plants and such had their community. Communities they built about the plants.
Yeah, and that picture is courtesy of the Women of ASARCO book that was put out, I think, about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, maybe. And it's got some great history of the ladies, the women who were, you know, married to the ASARCO workers, employees, at all levels, not just at the top, but also the factory workers and so on. Yeah. So it's a kind of a fascinating picture. And then the very next one shows the very west end of Smeltertown, and not too far from the cemetery that they have there. And we're building a list of the people buried at the cemetery also. That's become a state historic cemetery. And so we're really proud of the fact that the County Historic Commission had put that together and really lobbied to identify that as a historic cemetery.
There's a lot of people now that have noticed the cemetery. They used to kind of see it if they drive by on the freeway, but now that right there at Executive Center, you can see it directly across there. People are like, what is that?
They cut that hill down, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like, oh, my gosh.
For the border highway.
La Calavera. Yeah. So that's kind of what the folks, the worker bees, that's how they lived in there. Now, there was also a picture I didn't share with anybody, but it's the hospital there at Smeltertown. And there are stories of some of the wounded being taken across the river, and the doctors, the medical staff at the Smeltertown Hospital taking care of them. So we were very, let's just say, supportive organization, supportive country, actually of both sides, because we had people from the Revolution as well as the Federales.
It was an interesting time. I think the El Paso area unto itself was kind of stable politically. The United States seemed to be somewhat stable. They had Wilson in as president. Mm-hmm. But the idea of this whole thing going on the southern border, we were at war or just about to be thrown into war on the other side of the Atlantic. And so it's an interesting combination. And these people here in this area here, the Germans, the Mexicans, they were all trying to keep the United States engaged at this end of the country and not get involved in Europe.
Occupado.
And we were very nationally said at that time not to get involved in a foreign war, which was Europe.
Right.
And this was just, you know, it ended up kind of ricocheting back that we ended up sending us over there well prepared to deal with. So it was kind of a good news, bad news type thing.
The experience with the equipment, the experience with the battles, and the experience of running around looking for Villa, even though they didn't catch him, they shot a few people on the way trying to find him, apparently.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
And so that whole, you get the battle experience, and then a few months later, I believe, they turned it around after about 1916 and 17, and they ended up going into Europe. Mm-hmm. Interesting history here. We'll be back in a minute or two after these break on the El Paso History Radio Show.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. And by State Farm Agent Ralph Dickerson, 581-0000. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
We gotta talk about tonight at Concordia Cemetery, 3700 Yandel off Spaghetti Bowl, and it's at I-10, and it's on Central El Paso. August 21st today will be the annual Secret Society of John Wesley Hardin, and he's commemorating of the killing of the famous gunfighter turned attorney. John Wesley Hardin was killed by Constable John Zellman. The question still lingers from 126 years after his death. Was it murder, self-defense, or frontier justice? Depends upon where you're sitting. The answer is yes. 6 p.m., Yandel gates open. Yandel candle. Okay. Yandel gates open, parking is on the street only. You really can't you can't find room in there with people walking around.
It's difficult, yeah, because the roads are so narrow in there, so it's safer, especially being there at night. But and Six Guns will be on hand.
Yay. These Six Guns.
These Six Guns Shady Ladies, our first time to really perform in public in over a year and a half.
Yeah, other than the Easter parade.
Yeah, in the Easter parade. This would be great. Oh, that's right, I forgot we did the Easter parade. Mm-hmm.
Did you do a July parade?
We did do the July 4th.
We did the east side this year.
Yeah, but this is really sitting down and doing your stuff.
This is actually doing skits. Yeah.
They're recreating the whole story of basically when Hardin came to town until the time he was killed in the saloon. Murdered, killed, suicide, whatever you want to call it. But it'll be fun. We'll have it. And we're going to have the ghost tour. Did we talk about the ghost tour?
No, keep
going. We've got a ghost tour afterwards, a little mini ghost tour. So you're going to have a full evening events. We'll have a fundraiser. We're going to be selling tickets to win items at the event. So come on out. It'll be a lot of fun. It's only $5 for adults and $2 for kids.
Gates open at 6. Yeah. Events begin. Award-winning Old West reenactor group at 7. And they're going to reenact Hardin's Months in El Paso. For more information, get a hold of Patricia. And she's at 591-2326.
Yeah. No, it'll be a fun event, and I'm really looking forward to it.
And if you're not ready to go see something interesting in a graveyard, get ready.
Yeah. That's the place to do it. We're the only ones that do anything quite like that in the country.
Mm-hmm. Bring a folding chair.
Oh, yeah.
And closed-toed shoes.
Yeah, we see girls in high heels and sandals. Okay, Mission Del Rey this summer is offering El Pasoans and their visitors something special, an exclusive 20% off El Paso Radio History Show discount. Shop the store for great deals on hundreds of new decor, souvenirs, and unique gift items for you and the folks back home. Bring the kids and they'll have fun exploring and having their pictures taken in the old El Paso town jail. And for folks traveling with their pets, there's cool water and treats available for them. And don't forget to mention El Paso History Radio Show at checkout for 20% off discount. Mission Del Rey Southwest is located at 1421 Lee Trevino Drive, Suite A7. And they're open Monday through Saturdays, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. If you need to call them, they're 915 440-2140.
Bernie Sargent's in the house.
I am.
I can tell. There's a hat.
I am.
And the thing about what you do is so much all over the history of El Paso, including the reenactment tonight at Concordia.
Mm-hmm.
But you're here today talking about your background a little bit as the County Historical Commission chairman, as well as what that commission does. And back when you were there, you guys put together a whole bunch of monuments, historic monuments, during the Mexican Revolution to various things. How'd you go about figuring out which one you're going to do next and by about whom?
Well, again, that was the committee would get together, and they would try to formalize and prioritize the monuments or the markers as they saw fit. Because there were so many, and so many of importance, but what is important to you or me was not necessarily important to other people. And what impact did that particular location, site, person, or place have on the United States and have on Mexico? And those are the kind of things they had to weigh out in formalizing. And I will say one thing, too. During the tenure that I was there, our commission was the first commission in the state of Texas to produce markers in English and Spanish.
Good idea.
And then we also were the first in the state to identify the location by GPS coordinates. And now that's everybody's doing it now. And if you go,
I think you and I made that up on a video.
Yeah. And if you go to the Texas Historical Commission site, or you go to the El Paso County site and the commission site under the El Paso County, you can find that list. It's quite a few. There's over 200. And they're all done. They're all identified by GPS coordinates.
One of your guys actually, Will DeBusk, he actually drove there with a GPS device and wrote it down.
Yeah, Will did. The late Will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great guy.
Character.
Yeah, he was also responsible for maintaining the markers, keeping them clean and
pretty. He had them in his garage sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think we've all done that.
Oh.
We've had them in ours, and now the Destination El Paso is gracious enough. They store them at the parking facility downtown.
All right. Got a couple of minutes left here in this segment before the top of the news. My next picture I got here is Smeltertown kids hauling water. What's that about?
That's a cute picture. I mean, even with all the strife going on in the community and the way that these kids lived, the conditions they lived under, they found ways to earn a little bit of money, and they would haul water to the other folks in Smeltertown. I just thought that was the cutest darn picture, because it shows how kids of all ages, size, backgrounds, they'll do anything and everything they can to make do.
Yeah.
Well, I guess a big deal there is make sure you have a big bucket.
And a mule.
A mule will help. And the wheels, how are you going to carry that stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
It was such a drag.
rim shot. Okay, where are you going next on pictures?
The next one we show a group of soldiers. They're National Guard soldiers camped out at San Jacinto Plaza. In the background, you can see the federal building, and behind that, you can see the county building. So that's the soldiers' camp there. I'm not quite sure what that building is that they're constructing. I'll have to go back and do some research so that next time we can talk about that particular building. And this was 1916. And by that time, things have started to wane here on the border, because things took a lot bigger turn for the worse for Pancho Villa circa 1915. And as things got difficult for him, he got a little bit testy on the border, and then he had to retreat further inland.
Well, 1915 was a pivotal year for him.
Yes.
Because Wilson had basically turned off his concurrence of Villa's side being the one to back.
Turned off the spigot.
And he started with giving the other guy passage on U.S. Army trains going across the border, and outflanked Villa's people by a couple hundred miles by going down the border train. And so then in October of 1915, and then by 1915 November, they had the issues at the stash house. They raided the stash house. We'll get to that in a bit. But then they also had the problem coming up in January, where they killed a bunch of miners down on a track in Mexico. And by 16 March, they raided Columbus.
Yeah.
So that was a really weird time frame. We'll get to that at some point and talk about that and see how some of those things spelled out.
Yeah, because there's a lot of stories afloat with regards to why he did the Columbus raid and why he didn't.
Oh, he was mad for so many reasons.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break here, come back after the news and do this some more. Got Bernie Sargent here. We do have a pre-recorded show. But some of us might make it to Pepe's today. Yes. I think I will.
Yes, I think we might. Oh, no, we can't. That's right. We've got to get ready for the cemetery.
The cemetery thing.
Yes.
All right, everybody else, we'll see you after the news. And good luck with the cemetery thing, by the way.
Thank you much.
Talk to you after the news.
Thank you for listening to the El Paso History Show. There's another hour to go, so please stay tuned. This hour is brought to you by Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, home of the one and only margarita. And by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. And by State Farm Agent Ralph Dickerson, 581-0000. We'll be right back after the news, right here on News Radio 690 KTSM El Paso.